Welcome to the February-March edition of Heart to Heart. Towards Unity, an address by White Eagle given on the 1st of February, 1942. We will preface our talk with the words of your hymn, Blessed Are the Pure in Heart. Truly, a man or a woman need not possess great knowledge or book learning, nor be a king or a leader, in order to be a vessel through which the divine light can pour. Did not Jesus say, "Except ye become as a little child, ye shall in no wise enter the kingdom of heaven"? Your own experience tells you that harmony, humility, kindliness towards life and people, a tranquillity of spirit, brings to you a state of mind in which all the world looks rosy. You lose care. You have neither worry nor anxiety. As soon as purity of spirit, purity of heart is yours, as soon as your heart is loving to all, you experience a sense of union, not only with others, but with spiritual forces. And although you may not be able to express in thought, let alone in words, that harmony of spirit, nevertheless, you are sure that you commune with invisible worlds, with, we were going to say, inaudible harmonies and music. Such an exquisite state of being comes and goes perhaps in a flash, leaving you rather depressed, because when spiritual or heavenly bliss is reached, there is bound to be the reaction. But do not be despondent. This reaction has its place in your spiritual evolution. It is this rhythm of life, the swing of the pendulum, the rise and fall, which makes the harmony of God, and it is your work, our work, to interpret this universal rhythm. We would understand what part we should play in this spiritual plan of the evolution of God in men and women, this manifestation of the God Spirit in matter. Separation comes to us all in varying degrees and ways. This sense of separation in people brings to them the sorrows and bitterness of earth life. They feel separated from loved ones, separated from light, from understanding, separated from that heavenly life from which humanity has come. Because remember, within every person is that knowledge of a higher state, of a place of harmony and truth and beauty which he or she has lost. Because people vaguely and unconsciously recognize this separation from their true state, their true home, they suffer. And this mental suffering brings about material suffering. So if we wish to overcome our sufferings, to help others, we must overcome this sense of separation so constantly with us. I was asked a little while ago how to transmit thoughts to someone a long distance away. We are constantly telling you that in spirit there is no time, and in spirit there is no separation by distance. Therefore, spirit has overcome time and space. Shall we put this in another way and say that spirit has been taught how to overcome this illusion? For instance, supposing I wish to send a message to my brother, say, in a body in the Himalayas. I would not think of the space which separates us. I would instead think of my brother as being here by my side, and I would talk to my brother as if he were present. I would not make any effort to project my thought over some great distance, thereby creating a barrier? There is no distance in spirit, no separation. And if you wish to send a telepathic communication to anyone, whether in a physical body or in a sphere which you call removed from the earth, you should realize that that friend, whether incarnate or discarnate, is here by your side. There is no sense of separation in spirit. These spiritual laws are understood and used by those whom we will describe as the advanced, the vanguard of present humanity. The Brotherhood has a work for humanity. It leads humanity to a state of spiritual enlightenment. Look back over the world's history, and you will see certain teachers stand out as peaks, according to the needs of the race into which the teacher incarnated, illumination was given. You, of course, will immediately think of the Master Jesus, the Christ, but there were others long before his day. Supreme above all such teachers is the one light whom you call Christ. Christ is universal. Christ is cosmic. Christ shines through all true, pure religion, and Christ is within the heart of everyone. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. But the Son dwells in the pure in heart, as Jesus said, I and my Father are one. No separation in that perfect Trinity of which you are a part. The men and women who have realized this mystery and who now have withdrawn from physical contact with humanity are working behind the veil to direct operations on the outer plane. Many here are acquainted with the guidance which comes from the astral plane and from the spiritual world. Many of you, in simple and sweet faith, look to your friends in the spirit world for help. When the contact is true and your heart is pure, you always receive that guidance and that help. It will never fail. The key is purity of heart, purity of motive, selflessness of purpose. You have many demonstrations of the loving guidance of your friends in the beyond. Humanity as a whole has had and is now having proof of the care of the elder brethren, although large numbers on earth will not admit such guidance. Their brain is the stumbling block. They demand proof, and often that which they consider proof is something which satisfies the material mind only. We do not blame any man or woman for this demand, but such proof calls for payment, such as purity of heart and mind and motive. When that payment is made, proof is obtained. The law of karma is both individual, national, and international, and is the law of the Father Motherhood of God and the Brotherhood of humanity. Karma clearly shows that people cannot live to themselves. Their every thought and action has an effect upon others and upon themselves. Before we leave, we would say one thing. If you will strive for understanding, for at-one-ment with life, strive with pure hearts to overcome the barriers of prejudice, to realize love and brotherhood and goodwill amongst all, You take a big step forward towards your own happiness and the happiness of all people if you do so. Above all, let us cultivate goodwill, comradeship, a sense of humour, an understanding of the little eccentricities of men and women. God be with you, and may the peace of heaven dwell in your heart. From Age to Age by Simon Bentley. Whatever is going to happen next is the question being asked by so many of us at this time, following a year of unprecedented chaos, confusion, and conflict. Nothing seems certain or stable as we and our world are carried forward regardless, as on a river so deep and with such a strong current that we simply have to go with it whether we want to or not. It seems there is only one choice between fighting against what often seems inevitable or going with the flow. Which is the best choice varies with circumstances, but it takes both courage and wisdom to get it right. It is also hard to look intelligently at the bigger picture, at what is happening to the world as a whole, when so many of our individual lives are being turned upside down in so many ways. It could be said that astrologers have a particular opportunity to address this situation, to make it explicable. I agree, with the one condition that is needed to make astrology itself explicable, the backing of a sound spiritual philosophy. We, of course, are fortunate to have White Eagle's teaching as our touchstone. With that, what is happening in the world and the astrology that reflects it both make perfect sense. Granted, that is a bold statement to make, but let's try together to understand that bigger picture. Over the years, White Eagle has spoken repeatedly of the coming age, the age of Aquarius. Indeed, we may have become so used to hearing or reading it that we've forgotten to see the link between the transition from one age to another and the chaos that tends to accompany it. We may be looking forward with some apprehension, but we need first to look back to see what we are moving forward from, in order to understand what needs to happen to bring the new age into being and realize its potential. A major astrological reason why a change of age tends to bring chaos is that with every such change, there is a change in element. Pisces is a water sign, Aquarius an air sign. Water is linked with feelings and emotions, air with thoughts and ideas, things of the mind. An emotional approach to life tends to be immediate and instinctive in its reactions, whereas a mental approach is more measured and considered. Obviously, we all have something of each in our own makeup, but the change of age makes a big difference in what life expects from us. In Piscean times, for the vast majority of people, life meant simply blind obedience to higher authority, coupled with acceptance of one's lot in life. Although the age produced some very eminent thinkers and philosophers, most people were not encouraged to think for themselves. The major religions and their leaders, in particular, discouraged independent thought and told us what to think and believe. This one point is a major factor contributing to the current unsettlement in the world, because the Aquarian Age is one in which we shall all be learning to think for ourselves. Many are already doing that. Unchallenged earthly authority will no longer be a primary factor in life, individual or collective. In the New Age, authority has to be earned, not bestowed. No wonder there is so much unrest. We might well ask why the change is taking place in this way. In order to understand, we need to take another look back. The advent of a new age is also the dissolution of an old one. Those immersed in the old dispensation are understandably reluctant to accept changes that seem to threaten their way of living and even their existence, so they resist and fight, whether literally or metaphorically. What we are seeing is, in essence, the final and desperate struggle by the flag bearers of the old age to assert themselves while they still can. It is a most uncomfortable scenario, inevitably, but it seems that it must play itself out before the ideals of the new age can be firmly established. This will take time. It is natural for us to feel impatient as well as sad at what is taking place in our world, but like Rome, a new age was not built in a day. Could we, humanity, have made the transition any less difficult? Yes, possibly. We cannot change what has already happened, but we can always do our best to alter what is yet to come. And this is where, once again, White Eagle's teaching comes in handy. He told us that an aspect of the Lodge's work was to see humanity through the years of fire. At the time he said it, most of his hearers thought it referred to the years of war that, even in 1936, they could already see coming. That may have been part of it, but it seems increasingly apparent that the years of fire refer to the entire period of unrest that is accompanying the transition from the Piscean to the Aquarian age. At this point, it is instructive to take another look at the original horoscope of the White Eagle Lodge, for the moment when White Eagle spoke the words of dedication on February the 22nd, 1936. Both the old age and the new are present in this chart in various ways, but the most obvious is that the sun and moon are both in Pisces, while Mercury and Venus are both in Aquarius. Of course, the sun and moon are the more important of those influences, which might beg the question why, in the horoscope of an organisation that is helping move the world forward into the Aquarian age, they are in Pisces. This is quickly answered. The Lodge had to fit in with the prevailing conditions at the time it was founded, so needed a thorough understanding of the nature of the old age in order to find the right path to guide people from the old to the new. If it had come in with all Aquarian guns blazing, so to speak, it would have very likely sunk without trace in a relatively short time. Another illustration is provided by the house position of Sun and Moon, right on the cusp of the eighth house. This is the house of death, transformation, and life's deepest secrets of occult and spiritual matters. Pisces may be strong in the chart, but the eighth house symbolism seems to point clearly to the passing of the Piscean Age and its transformation to the New Age. Saturn's position, also in Pisces and in the eighth, reinforces this further, but also shows how hard it can be to let go. White Eagle never said our work would be easy. Also, a very conspicuous feature of this chart is the position of Uranus, very close to the midheaven, top of the chart. Uranus, as ruler of Aquarius, is clearly connected with the New Age nature of the Lodge work. The midheaven and 10th house are symbolic of our work, the service we give to the world. It is also the planet of truth and of new and revolutionary ideas and behaviour. In the Lodge chart, Uranus is harmoniously and strongly linked with the Sun and the Moon, thus helping the process of dismantling the old and bringing in the new. It also has links, though more challenging ones, with Mercury and Venus in Aquarius. This combination indicates very well the general challenges associated with the work to establish the New Age ideals. In fact, this grouping is contradictory in a way that exactly illustrates the current situation in the world. The impetus to move forward is there, represented by the planets in Aquarius and by Uranus. But Uranus is not comfortable in this chart, being in that classic sign of stability and dependability, Taurus. They don't go together well, one might say. Uranus is iconoclastic. Taurus, a great champion of the status quo. Interestingly, Uranus is once again in Taurus at present, which seems especially appropriate. Ultimately, the tension is relieved by the Sun-Moon conjunction in Pisces, which is effectively saying that reaching the New Age also involves a need to surrender and go with the flow, but that above and within it all, God is in charge. Thus, as I hinted in the opening paragraph, our work involves both fighting for what we know is right, however difficult to achieve, but also going with the flow, often at the same time. In my next article, I shall expand on the influence and role of Uranus, very much the New Age planet, in these turbulent times. A Religion of Happiness by Colm Haywood. One of the early White Eagle books, published in 1947, carries the same title as my article, although the book needs reading in its fullness for the title to be understood properly. I think the phrase is White Eagle's own, although Brother Faithful, Ivan Cook, would have done much to popularise it. It's a phrase that has been with me all my life, and I've certainly paid lip service to it up to this point, seeing it as a nice way of saying how special White Eagle's teaching is, a religion of happiness. Its depth might be better understood today, I suspect, if the book were entitled Happiness as a Creative Power. And I'll try and explain what I mean by that. Thought, White Eagle says, is always creative. Thus, to think happiness, to project happiness by our thoughts, brings a real gift, not only to the one who practices it, but to all around him or her. But can we just do that? Project happiness? I believe White Eagle would say yes, we can, but I think he would also acknowledge that such a demand on the self requires some work. Let's look at how we might fulfill that demand, though. I think the first thought to encourage us is that to rise upward through the planes is not just a search for enlightenment, whatever that might mean, but a progression actually to be defined by happiness. It was a revelation to me when I experienced, high on a mountain ridge, the awareness that the best way of recognizing that I was functioning on a higher plane was the happiness I felt. I was earthed, yes, my feet made careful contact with the mountain, but in some way my consciousness, without being fixed on a topic or an object, felt absolute freedom and a very uncomplicated joy. I said to myself with a sense of novelty, "This is what the etheric world is." Up to then, I'd thought I had to have visions of nature, spirits and angels to contact the etheric, but suddenly I was seeing very little at all, except where to put my feet, physical consciousness, and a broad sensation of being part of a life so free that all the rest of me could dance. Happiness comes, then, from reaching up into the higher worlds, something White Eagle says we most easily learn to do through meditation. I had another perception of how White Eagle's teaching offers us a religion of happiness on Christmas Day last year. It has long been a tradition, requested by White Eagle himself, that his family, in inverted commas, should use noon on that day as a moment to connect in thought consciously with everyone else involved in his work, and also with our own loved ones who have passed on. We publicise this a little less than we once did, sensitive to those whose families expect their Christmas dinner to be served shortly after. Yet I think we miss something if we do not make the contact, namely the joy of loving and being loved, in the context of community. It is really a celebration of there being no separation between us. All those on the path and all those who are linked with us by love. In love, indeed, there is no separation. But the sense of being linked as one family is part of the happiness White Eagle would remind us we are entitled to. Quite obviously, the better our understanding of this, the less we will want to exclude anyone at all from the circle of loved ones. Brotherhood, if it is to be real, has to be inclusive. But brotherhood is itself a real part of our happiness, and so is all of our so-called spiritual awareness. Ours is a religion of happiness, because through it we understand one another better. We forgive more. We understand that everyone genuinely seeks to do their best in life, even though that best is not the best that we would like them to perform. It's in speaking of our relationship with others that most of the work has to be done, of course. How exactly we can love one another will depend on our own psychologies, on things such as the amount of love we experienced in childhood and what has come in the way to complicate that since. Another thing I am sure White Eagle would say is that to be part of the White Eagle family is to be on a path of healing, and that healing is most often something that happens inwardly, not by any means just at the physical body level. He would also say that receiving healing and giving healing are more of a continuum than an opposition. In short, our religion of happiness is as much about finding healing as anything else. I'm inclined to think that one of the pitfalls on the spiritual path, White Eagle refers to them often, is thinking that because we are spiritual, we don't need to look at our psychologies. I can only say to those who think this, why did White Eagle once so clearly answer the question, "What is spirituality?" with the words, spirituality is in reality learned lessons. For those who find understanding their psychology frightening, Anna's book, In a New Light, is a wonderful way to get to the possibilities of healing the self without getting stuck into disciplines that so easily feel daunting. There is honestly always another version of ourselves waiting to be born, and that new version will, if we have our eyes on the star, always be happier than the present one. We don't need the language of psychology necessarily, but we do need to do the work, and yet, as Anna shows, that work can be incredibly productive of happiness. Sometimes our issues in psychology run so deep that they involve our mental health. I've just read an article that is outwardly a long way from the sort of life experience I've been describing. It was on the subject of how we treat mental illness. It is in Paradigm Explorer and is an article by Andrew Powell. In it, a long string of statistics makes clear what most of us already know, which is that mental illness at all levels is horrifyingly present in our society, and that although ways of treating it have developed over the years, it seems a fact that our social habits encourage it. Violence on film, TV, and in video games, the shortening of our attention span through social media and the like, our largely godless society, excess of consumerist choice, all these things and more can encourage mental illness. We are only just starting to question our reliance on drugs in combating mental illness, and even if they can offer some relief, that drugs don't stop us getting ill in the first place. So is our religion of happiness an impossibly naive concept? I still don't think so. Mental health is one of the great challenges of our age, but we are not going to solve the problems overnight. What I do think is that a real embrace of what is beyond us, above or within, if you prefer, is one of the key tools in the struggle. Meanwhile, as the Bodhisattva principle tells us so clearly, how can our happiness be complete if there are others suffering, especially if in some way we exclude them? Two recent trends have really helped in our embrace of those who suffer in such a way. The first is the recognition that normality doesn't really exist in the area of human beings themselves. With this is the idea of neurodiversity, that we are endlessly diverse in our neuropathology, and that the recognition of this enables us to move on from a judgmental approach to others' mental health. I am quite certain Whiteacre would hope us to find our love expanding to include all in such a way. The other trend, perhaps, and in its infancy, is for our psychologists to recognise and embrace areas of human experience often called spiritual, but covering everything from extrasensory perception to past life recall, as well as the role of inner revelation. The power of our religion of happiness is that it does not struggle with such developments. We are not, I hope, stuck in our boxes. We see things with positivity. And that is the other component of it, positive thought. Not a sentimental attachment to everything being all right, but creative positivity. actually working on our outlook to ensure that we are actually seeing the good in all things. Sermons in stones and good in everything, as Shakespeare said. Not so long ago, we had a campfire discussion about how to define the special uniqueness of White Eagle's teaching, and I was really touched when someone said, "Oh, it's that in the White Eagle Lodge, people are so positive about everything." I believe that in some measure, at least, we really have taken to heart the Christian injunction, "Resist ye not evil, but overcome evil with good." Overcome, note, not acquiesce to a process because we feel we can't change it. In other words, our happiness is something that is as much of a tool as anything else in our box of tricks. There are many ways to consider the demons in modern life, but it takes a real commitment in White Eagle's teaching to be so resolute in the light that we uncreate the demons. But we can. Faith in Goodness by Anna Haywood. It is hard sometimes to keep faith in God, but perhaps even harder to keep faith in the goodness in all people. It seems to me that we are being tested in keeping hold of that faith much more at the moment, and indeed perhaps the whole world is. The increase in polarized thought doesn't help. When thought, ethics or morality are polarized, there is the tendency for us all to fall on one side or the other of every event. When we take one side, we inevitably see the other as wrong or even wicked. Consequently, it is harder to believe that even on the other side, people have goodness within, light, spirit, love, tenderness, beauty, evolution. We have horrendous acts reported to us. Where then is that goodness? Do we really believe that the goodness exists? Or do we fall back on the belief in evil and that some people are just evil? It's a big question, and one each one of us has to tackle for ourselves within. But my point is that if we do believe what White Eagle and some other traditions teach us, that we are all good in our heart, then that changes all kinds of thoughts that arise from that belief. Perhaps we can no longer take sides. Yes, we can be horrified and condemn the acts which are destructive of life and lives. And we can work to heal the victims, but we cannot condemn the perpetrators themselves anymore. We have to believe in their path being one which can ultimately lead to resurrection and wholeness. We also have to believe that we can help more by believing in that goodness within than through complete condemnation of the human beings. This cannot be easy to do, and especially if we ourselves or our loved ones are affected by the acts of others. But notice I'm referring to their acts, not them as a whole. To make that distinction is easy when it comes to one's children. "I know you are better than this. What you are doing is not acceptable." It is not easy to see that in adults when we hold polarized views or are faced with media coverage of suffering. One way to contradict the tendency to polarized thinking of us and them, when we hear or see the acts we find reprehensible, is to say immediately to ourselves, they were not born wanting to do that. This is quoting President Bartlet in the TV programme The West Wing. This can remind us of the innocence which once, even in this lifetime, was there in everyone, and which our teaching tells us is still there, despite all the acts which we may do or not do afterwards. That innocence is the goodness within all, the light, if you will. My problem with seeing this as light alone is that it elevates it above the personal. Why is that a problem, you might ask? Surely it is good to think of the highest. And of course this is true. But what I think is needed is to bring that awareness of the light in all right down into what we think every day, like goodness. Goodness is something we can all grasp as a concept. We all have visions of what that means in everyday life. We've all come across what we consider to be goodness in others and experienced ourselves being good, if we're honest. So being aware of the goodness within everyone is something we can relate to and envisage. Therefore, it is something we can encourage, imagine, and create. At a practical level, it is something we can work to advance through increasing the understanding of how people can be helped to rehabilitate, to literally return home to their true good selves. So I think the whole world is being challenged on this right now. Many of the props and sureties of religion and government have been taken away or changed, so that we have to do that kind of thinking for ourselves. How much are we ready to embrace the belief in goodness within all and everything that belief entails for the future? Having said that I wish to encourage the thought of goodness within all people, of course, the channeling of the power of the light for all is what helps us to hold on to our faith in that goodness. Through radiating light, we are assured that it helps others to find again their own light and to have the courage and strength to help those who are suffering. So here are two processes which have helped me. The first is when you feel depressed. When you feel depressed, if you can, think of the most beautiful, uplifting, or magical things you have ever seen. Try to remember the feelings within as you experienced them. Now magnify those feelings by 1,000. This and more is the degree of bliss that we can expect when we reach the higher levels of existence. The task is to bring as much of those feelings as we can right down into life on earth now. Imagine gathering the feelings up inside. And as you breathe in, bringing that bundle of positivity right into your earthly consciousness and out into your encounters with daily life. Holding on to those feelings becomes an issue. It's as if the bundle breaks apart and becomes a collection of helium-filled balloons, which are hard to grasp as they escape upwards. Having once remembered them, however, the feelings can be easier to bring to mind again and recreate now. And this is the point of a regular practice in meditation, or positive imaginings and their repetition. It does help the mind to reconnect the feelings with those positive ones more quickly when we are in need. And the second process is about escaping upwards. When things are difficult, life feels weighty. The heaviness is hard to escape from, try as you might. Keeping with the theme of balloons, one vision which may help is this. Picture yourself as a hot air balloon, tied down by guy ropes. You are held captive and unable to move up as you wish, until, one by one, the guy ropes are released, and the feeling of release is wonderful as you quickly float upwards into the blue, sun-filled sky. These are just words at the moment. The tendency, I know, is to read and move on. So my suggestion is that if you wish to make them real for you, give yourself time to experience them, so that if they work for you, when there is need, you can remember and return to them. White Eagle says, we have to train ourselves through love towards God and others to generate spiritual light. This light can shine from your heart and shine from your whole selves. Onlookers are arrested by the harmony and the light, which they do not know as light. Nevertheless, light from the soul is shining forth. Train yourselves also to look not at the outer garment only, but at the aura of each one. In this way, you will unfold the inner power to discern and to bring forth the love in all.